The Kavanaghs, Colsterworth's vicar, Cricklade Manor's staff, the senior estate workers and representatives from each of the Cuppa teams gathered at the nearest grove to the manor towards the end of Duke Day. Joshua and Dibey were invited and stood at the front of the group that assembled just inside the shabby stone wall. The rows of weeping roses stretched out ahead of them, blooms and cups alike upturned to a fading azure sky, perfectly still in the breathless evening air. Time seemed to be suspended. Duke was falling below the western horizon, a sliver of pyrexic tangerine, pulling the world's illumination down with it. The vicar, wearing a simple cassock, held his arms up for silence. He turned to face the east. On cue, a watery pink light expanded across the horizon. A sigh went up from the group. Even Joshua was impressed. There had been about 2 minutes of darkness the previous evening. Now there would be no night for a sidereal day, Duchess Knife flowing seamlessly into Duke Day. It wouldn't be until the end of the following Duchess Knife that the stars would come out again for a brief minute. After that it would be the evenings when the two suns overlapped, and the morning darkness would grow longer and longer, extending back into Duchess Knife until Norfolk reached inferior conjunction and only Duke was visible. Midwinter. The vicar led his flock in a brief harvest thanksgiving service. Everybody knew the words to the prayers and psalms, and quiet murmuring voices banded together to be heard right across the grove. Joshua felt quite left out. They finished by singing All Creatures Great and Small. At least his neural mnemonics had that in a memory file. He joined in heartily, surprised by just how good he felt. After the service, Grant Kavanagh led his family and friends on a rambling walk along the aisles between the rows. He touched various roses, feeling their weight, rubbing petals between his thumb and forefinger, testing the texture. "Smell that," he told Joshua, as he handed over a petal he had just picked. "It's going to be a good crop. Not as good as 5 seasons ago, but well above average." Joshua sniffed. The scent was very weak but recognizable, similar to the smell which clung to a cork after a bottle of tears had been opened. "You can tell from this?" he asked. Grant put his arm around Louise as they sauntered along the aisle. "I can. Mr. Butterworth can. Half of the estate workers can. It just takes experience. You need to be here for a lot of summers." He grinned broadly. "Perhaps you will be, Joshua. I'm sure Louise will ask you back if no one else does." Genevieve shrieked with laughter. Louise blushed furiously. "Daddy!" She slapped his arm. Joshua raised a weak smile and turned to examine one of the rose plants. He found himself facing Marjorie Kavanagh. She gave him a languid wink. His neural mnemonics sent out a volley of overrides to try and stop the rush of blood to his own cheeks. After the inspection walk, the manor staff served up an outdoor buffet. Grant Kavanagh stood behind one of the trestle tables, carving from a huge joint of rare beef, playing the part of jovial host, with a word and a laugh for all his people. As Duchess Knight progressed, the rose flowers began to droop. It happened so slowly that the eye could detect no motion, but hour by hour the thick stems lost their stiffness, and the weight of the large petals and their central carpel pod made gravity's triumph inevitable. By Duke morning most of the flowers had reached the horizontal. The petals were drying out and shriveling. Joshua and Louise rode out to one of the groves close to Wardley Wood and wandered along the sagging plants. There were only a few cuppers left, tending to the long rows, straightening the occasional collection cup. They nodded nervously to Louise and scurried on about their business. "Most people must have gone home to sleep," Louise said. "The real work will begin again tomorrow." They stood aside as a man pulled a wooden trolley past them. A big glass ewer webbed with rope was resting on it. Joshua watched as he stopped the trolley at the end of a row and lifted the ewer off. About a third of the rows had similar ewer waiting at the end. "What's that for?" he asked. "They empty the collection cups into those," Louise said. "Then the ewers are taken to the county rose yard where the tears are cast. And they stay in the cask for a year." "That's right. Why?" so they can spend a winter on Norfolk. They're not proper tears until they've felt our frost. It sharpens the taste, so they say.